coming up the month of July, that would be this month, an all-star celebration takes place at the 92nd Street Y, Lexington, and 92nd Street in New York City. And it's called, appropriately, Jazz in July. The artistic director of Jazz in July has gotten up this morning to join me to talk about the series, and specifically one celebration in particular. I'm speaking of Bill Charlap. And another special guest. Haven't seen this guy in a long time. And that makes my day today all that much more fun when the other guy is John Faddis. And speaking of our opening performance, I remember John Faddis from the stage at Caramore a few years ago when he introduced this piece of music that you just heard. He said, I asked Izzy Gillespie one time, what does con alma mean? And he said, with alma. That's what he said to John Faddis. Just to throw him off, and I suspect to make him dig just a little bit deeper. And boy, has he ever, since the age of about 10 years old, right?
What, since the age of 10 years old?
Been digging into that trumpet.
7, I started.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
7 years old.
But it was at the age of 10 that I was introduced to Dizzy Gillespie's music. And then that's when I really started. It's like someone told me he knew where there was some buried treasure, and he asked me if I could dig it.
Yeah, indeed. And you became lifelong friends. Of course, the original impetus for your exploration came from Father Woody and Mother Winnie, who encouraged you.
Mildred.
Mildred. Millie.
Yeah.
Encouraged you to pick an instrument and run with it.
They made me, yeah.
Yeah.
Encouraged me. They made me get me off the streets.
Now it's come full circle because you yourself are a father of a 7-year-old.
Yes. I'm not sure in which direction he's leaning, but he has a guitar that he likes to noodle on.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Excellent. Someday we could have father and son. We have two kindred spirits with us today on WBGO. Jazz in July kicks off on the 18th. I should remember that. It's my sister's birthday. But Bill Charlap, again, you've put together just a spectacular series.
Thank you, Gary.
Excellent. In fact, your mom celebrates her 81st birthday today.
Happy birthday, Mom.
And she's part of one of those events.
Yes, she is. She's going to be singing on a concert of Richard Rodgers songs, which includes Sandy Stewart, my mom, Terrell Stafford, the trumpet, Harry Allen at the tenor saxophone, Gary Smullyan at the baritone saxophone, my wife, Renee Rosnes, at the piano, myself at the piano, Sean Smith at the bass, and Bill Stewart at the drums.
Ooh, that's a nice lineup. You always come together with something spectacular for July and jazz.
Well, thank you. They're all wonderful musicians, and the combinations together are always exciting for me and for everybody.
What do you remember about Dizzy Gillespie in terms of your coming up?
Well, I remember having an album of Oscar Peterson and Dizzy Gillespie that was one of my parents' albums. It was a duo album. Oscar made duet albums with 3 trumpet players. Oh, 4, okay. Well, I suppose Freddie Hubbard would be one, right? 5, okay. I'm getting the high sign from John. Well, the ones that I remember the most were Dizzy's record, especially Caravan, which absolutely knocked me out, Clark Terry, and a young trumpet player called John Faddis. And that was really something. Who were the other two, John?
Roy Eldridge, Sweets Edison.
There we are. And I believe there's a quartet record with Freddie Hubbard also, I think.
Yeah, but that came later.
Another thing that I loved was an album that was released called The Alternate Blues. It was a bunch of breakdown takes of the blues, but with 3 trumpeters, Clark Terry, Freddie Hubbard, Dizzy Gillespie. And on that album, is a ballad medley where the three trumpeters in this order, I think, Freddie Hubbard plays Here's That Rainy Day, magnificently, of course. Clark Terry then plays If I Should Lose You, also magnificently. Perfect. They're all such incredible artists and originals. But Dizzy comes in and plays The Gypsy and puts everyone away. It's just so profound. So what do I remember about Dizzy? I didn't know Dizzy personally, but he's a genius. He's the messenger of this music. He's the messenger of Charlie Parker's aesthetic.
And when you talk about that aesthetic and you talk about bebop,
yes,
and you break that down, I've actually read an article, I think with you, where you talked about the quintet in performance up there in Toronto. And you broke those tunes down and you said, well, what do you have here? You got Perdido. What's that? That's from the Book of Ellington.
Right.
You've got a couple of other bebop charts, but what are they? They're takeoffs on I Got Rhythm.
Sometimes.
So you're still talking about...
Well, there's interconnection in all of the music between the songwriters, the jazz writers, the players. Dizzy, of course, is sort of the progeny of Roy Eldridge. And as John is someone who Dizzy took under his wing, John is really Dizzy's protege. But all of these artists find their own voice and create something innovative and original, which is what it's all about, being yourself. Anyway, Dizzy was just a profound musical force and a musical giant, of course, but he was also one of the most brilliant entertainers. You really had a good time when you saw Dizzy Gillespie perform. He could make you laugh, and there was a sense of optimism and joy that was always there. Moody had that. And of course, Dizzy was, couldn't have been more important to Moody. So I'd rather hear John talk about Dizzy Gillespie because his connection with him is familial and quite profound. So I don't know. What do you think, John? What would you say?
Well, where should I start? Our relationship was one that when I first played with Dizzy, I was 15 years old, and it changed my life. And I knew that this music was what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a trumpet player. And our relationship was one such that he was my hero when I was a kid. You know, you have people. You know, you have young kids, and they have, at that time, who would they have? I don't know, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, Willie Mays, Sandy Koufax. They have these, you know, they have athletes on their wall. When I was about 12, I started putting pictures of Dizzy on the wall. He used to do an ad for something called Champale. And I remember that being in like an Ebony magazine, and cut it up, put it on the wall.
He sounds to me like he was encouraging to you.
Very. He was always so supportive. I think it's very unusual in that, you know, a lot of older males can feel threatened by younger people coming up. But Dizzy, I guess he always took a long-term view of what was going on, as Roy Eldridge didn't when Dizzy first came on the scene. And Dizzy had to tell Roy, what I'm doing doesn't take away from your contribution to the music. It's an extension of what you did. And then they became good friends, because Dizzy said when he first showed up on the scene, Roy wouldn't give him the time of day. So Dizzy was always very encouraging and supportive, without a doubt. But our relationship changed from where he was my idol to where he became a good friend and like a brother. Speaking to Bill's familia.
Sure, and an equal. from a standpoint of friendship and also from a standpoint of musicianship, Dizzy himself. Calls John Faddis the best ever, including me. And on the 24th of this month at 92nd Street Y, John Faddis, Jimmy Green, Renee Rosnes, Bill Charlap, Peter Washington, Kenny Washington, and Danny Sedalnik will get together and celebrate Dizzy Gillespie. And here this morning.
And it will be my 65th birthday.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I can't think of a better way to spend my birthday than to celebrate someone who was very important to me.
Well, maybe a little early.
Mr. Gillespie.
Mr. Gillespie, yes. Maybe a little early celebration here this morning. Gentlemen, could we hear?
What should we play, John?
How about Fiesta Mojo?
Sounds good to me.
Boom. Boom.
In the moment, just between two kindred spirits who on the 24th of this month at the 92nd Street Y will get together with some other musical friends and celebrate John Berks Gillespie. We're chatting this morning with Bill Charlap and John Faddis, 65 years young,
Not yet.
But you're fast approaching. You're going to be there. Now, the series, I misspoke, not the 18th, but the 17th gets underway.
That's right.
With a celebration called Crazy Rhythm Prohibition.
Well, that's just about the 20s and the songs that were written in the 20s, music of the 20s. But it's not repertory. Mm-hmm. It's repertoire. Songs like Just You, Just Me, and It Had to Be You, and Charleston, and Blue Skies, and oh, so many songs that we play today that are part of our landscape. Incredible musicians. Mary Stallings, the Touchstone singer, who is really one of the great singers in the world, and she's rarely here in New York, so we're delighted that she'll be with us. Myself and Ted Rosenthal at the piano, sort of being a, well, Armin Noden, you know, a 1920s two-piano team, but not 20s, 2018 team. Warren Vache at the cornet, Steve Wilson at the alto saxophone, James Chirillo at the guitar, Todd Kuhlman at the bass, and Dennis McCrell at the drums. It's a wonderful combination of musicians playing all those great songs.
How long does it take you to put together Jazz in July? Work on it all year?
You start working on it early in the year, and it comes together probably little by little throughout the year, sure.
Because both of you, like John referred to earlier about Dizzy Gillespie, about reaching out and getting young people involved, himself included. You're both educators. Bill, you over at William Patterson.
That's right.
And John, you up at Purchase.
Well, you know, you were talking about something about Gillespie that he was very generous. He really wanted to give people an education and nurture them and nurture the music. That's why they say that he was, and it's indeed true, the messenger of the music in a way. He spent a lot of time with people saying, this is how this works harmonically, and this is what we're thinking about rhythmically. He was an educator and a great educator. Generosity, you know, and humility too. You think about these musicians like Moody and Bobby Hutcherson and Dizzy. You can't imagine people with more greatness and more humility at the same time.
And that interconnectedness. I remember a live broadcast we did over at Liberty State Park back in the early 80s. And Dizzy was part of the bill. And it came time for him to perform, and he was nowhere to be found. So John, the chuckle, he knows. So they sent me out in search, and they found him with his soft trumpet bag, but not with the trumpet in it. It was full of fireworks. It was the 4th of July, and he had a whole group of kids. There must have been 30 kids around him, and he was lighting off fireworks. And I said, Diz, is that it? He goes, yeah, I know. First things first. And he was making that connection that you talk about,
Yeah. You
know, and it wasn't a formal music lesson, but it was a life lesson.
It's a beautiful thing.
You know, it was how to enjoy life.
Well, there's something about Dizzy, Armstrong, Roy Eldridge. They connected with all generations and all people, all at the same time. You know, I remember listening to Louis Armstrong as a child and feeling that, you know, he's playing just for me kind of feeling. When Sonny Rollins plays, when he played those great solo concerts that he would play, you know, it was like he was speaking to all generations all at the same time. And I think that there's a piece of that. A great humanity, a great spirituality, and fireworks. He wanted to have fun. He really was having fun, as serious as the music is, and it's very serious. I mean, this is a profound musician, a true maestro, but he didn't forget that we were also here to celebrate being alive.
That's exactly right. I remember a night at Lincoln Center. celebrating Benny Carter's birthday, and Dizzy was on the bill. And at the end of the night, and it was, you can imagine, Hank Jones, Kenny, just everybody who was everybody came.
All the Giants.
And said happy birthday and played. And the cake came out, and they almost had to call the fire marshal. It was his 75th birthday, and they wanted each candle to count. So at the end of the night, I went up to say goodnight to Dizzy. And he said, you like cranberry juice? And, I mean, kind of a non sequitur of sorts. Yes. And I said, well, yeah, I do. Why? And he goes, and he opens the refrigerator, and it was full of cranberry juice. And I said, well, yeah, I do. So he takes a bottle out, and he hands it to me. And he got something to keep it cold? I said, well, my refrigerator. No, no, something like this. And he holds up an ice bucket. And I said, no, I don't have an ice bucket. I have a fridge. He said, everybody needs an ice bucket. And so he puts the ice bucket and the cranberry juice, once again, inside the trumpet bag, and out we go. And it, you know, who's going to stop Dizzy Gillespie walking through with his trumpet in his hand? Nobody. But it was the end of a night of just spectacular musicianship, right? That was always apparent. A time in Nice, France, seeing Dizzy Gillespie with the rhythm stick, right? Through the lobby, yeah. And it's timeless, you know, this spirit that is Dizzy Gillespie. Now, let me ask you, as an educator, do you find students coming up, you know, I'm sitting here, Bruce Harris, for example, with Beginnings, a student of yours at Purchase, the same type of excitement toward this music and toward the looking over your shoulder? You know, a lot of young people don't want to look over their shoulder. My question is, where's your traction, man, if you're not looking over your shoulder?
Your foundation, you have to have a foundation.
Yeah.
And I usually start trumpet students. It sounds easy, but I'll give them a Louis Armstrong solo. And then they know, oh, my goodness, I have to work on this. Because his way of phrasing and his endurance can wipe a lot of trumpet players out. So then you get them to that, and then you work them up. You might give them, I might give them some Bics. I might give them some, what's the cat's name? Rex Stewart, Cootie Williams, and then bring them up to date.
Sure.
But they have to, like with Bruce Harris, when he was studying with me, he was very much into Clifford. And then so I snuck some Fats Navarro in on him. Snuck some Dizzy in on him. Snuck some Roy Eldridge in on him. And then, you know, he can go back, and he has a good foundation. It's a really good foundation. I'm very proud of Bruce, although I tried to get him to do something for 6 years with his embouchure. And then one day he came in for a lesson, and he was playing Delilah, Clifford Brown, and he went, "Bye," and hit the G flat. And I said, what have you been doing? He said, I changed my embouchure. So I've been trying to get you to do that for 6 years, and now...
I would say if John Faddis has something technical to tell you about playing the trumpet, you probably should listen.
You should take it in.
Yeah.
You know, it might be interesting to note that the last tune on Bruce's recording is an original, and it's called So Near, So Far. And that speaks volumes to where you are as a practicing and learning musician your whole life, doesn't it?
It's a lifetime of study. It's a life. No one's ever mastered the music. But, you know, Dizzy said when he was in his 70s, it's taken me this long to learn what not to play. Hmm. And then that starts another direction for him. And that was in his 70s. James Moody once said, Dizzy, man, I wish I knew the piano, you know, those things you were talking about back in the 40s. I wish I had. And Dizzy just looked at Moody and said, "You ain't dead." So Moody started taking piano lessons. In his 60s. He was in his 60s, started taking piano lessons, started composing. It was, you know.
And Moody had that lust for music all the time. You know, if there was a young player that he heard that he liked what they were doing, he would get together with them and say, "Show me what's going on the saxophone."
Yeah.
"Well, this is James Moody. I mean, really, there was nobody who played like that. He really was unbelievable." I remember when he had that stent put in, and he came back and he was playing. Reaney played with Moody for many, many years, and I got to hear him lots because I was always, you know, there hanging out. He came in, he played 45 choruses of Invitation. Every single one of them was magnificent. Every single one of them was filled with surprise and strong, like Muhammad Ali strong. It was really something.
Muhammad Ali strong, yeah.
And if I may say one thing, today's the 10th, right?
Yes.
Yesterday was the 9th?
Yes.
A belated happy birthday to Linda Moody.
Ah, she might be listening right now, too. You know, she listens online like a lot of folks do around the corner and around the world. We're chatting with Bill Charlap and John Faddis, the two of them coming together as part of this year's Jazz in July at the 92nd Street Y on the 24th. To celebrate Dizzy Gillespie. It's one of six concerts that Bill has put together. Covers a broad spectrum from the 20s. Richard Rodgers, his own mother, Sandy Stewart, will be part of that, and some other special nights, too. I turn your attention to 92y.org to find out more about that. 92y.org. Gentlemen, you're here in this wonderful performance studio. Can we have you come together?
Yes.
And not like Lennon and McCartney, but, yes. You know, come together with a tune of your choice.
Can you take me back where I came from? We're going to... we're going to play a great song by Harry Warren that it's one of those songs that's kind of American as apple pie. It's got that kind of quality to it. When Dizzy Gillespie played it, he personalized it, as he did everything. And one of the definitive instrumental recordings of this song is from Have Trumpet Will Excite. So that's why we're thinking about it in the context of Dizzy Gillespie. This is I Found a $1 Million Baby at a 5 and 10 cent store.
Bill Charlap, John Faddis, WBGO.
Thank you.
You know, some days when you come to work in the middle of the night are just more fun than others. And this is one of those days. Bill Charlap at the piano, John Faddis with the trumpet, coming by to hang out, share with us the spirit of Dizzy Gillespie and their own significant spirits. The lights are dimming.
Well, you lost another idea.
When I think it was in the 60s that Dizzy became a member of the Baha'i faith. And one of the things that Bill mentioned about Dizzy being a messenger, that's one of the beliefs of the Baha'i faith, that there throughout history have been many different messengers bringing different messages. And I once asked Dizzy if his music had ever, if his music changed when he became Baha'i. And he really sat and thought, and about a minute later he says, "No, I think I've always been pretty spiritual."
Wow.
And I know that when he used to say that when he passed away, he wanted to be known as a humanitarian. You know, someone who spent his life in the service of humanity. And I think, you know, the way he treated me, the way I've seen him treat other musicians, I've seen him let people come on the stage with him that could barely play their instrument. And he said, well, you know, there's a good chance for him to learn.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of guy Dizzy was.
Could be one of those evolutionary moments, right, that you both referred to at the beginning
absolutely.
Of the hour.
We absolutely.
Said, it's constantly evolving.
Yeah.
John, you've been with the trumpet for quite a few years. Quite a few years, right?
Yeah.
50 plus, right?
Almost to 60 now.
Yeah. What for you has changed in your approach to playing, say, over the last 20 years?
Oh, my goodness. Well, one of the things that happened, Dizzy used to say, the older you get, the longer you have to warm up. Bill talked about the session that Dizzy did with Oscar Peterson. Dizzy got there 4 hours in front so he could warm up. So when Oscar Peterson walked in the room, Dizzy was lying there, you know, pretending he was asleep, but he was ready. And I think that's one of the things that when I was young, I didn't warm up. I had to pick up the horn and start playing. Whether it was with Thad Jones and whether it was Lionel Hampton, I had to pick up the horn. But now, the older I've gotten, the more I got to warm up. Very prophetic.
Dick Hyman often tells a story when he was studying with Teddy Wilson. Dick was a young guy, in his 20s at the time. And he asked Mr. Wilson, he said, "You know, some days, Mr. Wilson, I feel really great at my instrument. And then on other days, I sit down to play and things just aren't connecting." And Teddy said to him, "That's why you practice." And Dick still tells that story. He really finds that to be important because, you know, that's part of the magic secret. Kenny Washington tells me about once staying over at Hank Jones' house and early in the morning hearing very slow scales at the piano, early. Hank is sitting there practicing. Now, this is Hank Jones, probably in his 80s, you know, something like that. So that's how it is.
Yeah. Practicing, listening, evolving. It's all part of Jazz in July at the 92nd Street Y, isn't it? Each and every night, the program.
I suppose it is for every musician because all of these musicians are master musicians and wonderful individuals. And that's really what it's all about, being yourself.
We heard a moment ago, "I found a million dollar baby," from Have Trumpet Will Excite. I'd like to go out this morning with another piece of music from that same recording when I suspect that Dizzy didn't have to show up 4 hours early to work his magic on St. Louis Blues.
Sounds good. You know, that there's a section in this piece that Dizzy, you know, pop, pop, up, 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 up. There's a solo section that he does with the drums. And he said that that was what the dancers at the Savoy used to do. You know, it's, I don't know if many people know about this section.
Always listening, always watching, always evolving, and at the same time, learning.
I remember the pianist Dorothy Donegan saying that she was going to play some Debussy at that particular moment of her performance. She said, I'm going to play some Debussy now. And then she looked at the audience and she said, Debussy handy. And she played St. Louis Blues.
Bill Charlap, John Faddis, WBGO Newark.